Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the AI Comic Pod. Just me and Stu this week to review one of the year's biggest releases, let's be honest. It's Deadpool 2. Stu, I'm going to go straight and we're going to be honest. What was your initial reaction because you watched this film last night?
Initial, a little bit disappointed. I think I'd maybe overhyped it a little bit, as I'm prone to anyway, but because there were so many people coming out saying how amazing it was and how hilarious and how it was better than the first one. And I watched Deadpool 1 on Monday, and I think Deadpool 1 has got a more coherent plot. I've said the same thing a couple of times today. To me, it just feels like the pacing was off. It felt like there were some bits where there was amazing, like high-octane action at 100 mile an hour, and then there was other bits where they were doing really sort of laboured story points, and it just didn't tie together. And I am not the kind of person that normally whinges about pace, and I normally go, oh, fuck off, what are you talking about? But there was bits of it where I really struggled and was sort of like, come on, say something funny, or, you know, cut someone's knob off or something. And I was really struggling to, you know, wait for it.
I think the first 20 minutes were a bit of a shock, in the sense that it didn't feel quite typical of what we'd come to expect. Obviously, for me, they felt like they had to raise the stakes. So recently listened to Ryan Reynolds being interviewed. He kind of said that the explanation behind Deadpool's humor is that he's kind of funniest at his most tragic. And they toyed with various ideas about how to kind of bring that. And obviously in the first movie, it's all about him dying and ultimately not, but what happens to his key assets, which is him, you know, looking the way he does, like two avocados fuck themselves, or whatever the line from the first film is.
And there was no love in there, it was just hate fucking, like there was something seriously wrong with the relationship.
It needed to introduce that in their eyes, something quite bold, something quite, you know, let's be honest, this is a spoiler special, quite early doors, so we're talking all aspects of the film. If you've not gone to see it, I would wholeheartedly recommend you do, which I think we'll come around to the opinion of at the end of this. But yeah, then come back and listen to what we have in store. But, you know, they kill off his girlfriend in the first 10 minutes of the film, five minutes.
And this is one of the things that's drawn a lot of criticism, without going too much into it. Anyone that's ever heard of the phrase women in refrigerators, I actually remember the original comic because it happened in a Green Lantern comic where Green Lantern Kyle Rayner's girlfriend is killed and stuffed into a refrigerator. And the only purpose it serves is it's a very cheap plot point. And a very famous female writer, Gail Simone, who's done a lot of Wonder Woman, and she actually is one of the, you know, pivotal names behind The Birds of Prey and Domino,
yeah,
from this film, she sort of sat down and went, you know what, this is kind of bullshit. And she actually created a really low sort of tech website. And they detailed all the times when women are killed or abused in comics just as a cheap plot point. And now the Vanessa angle has drawn a lot of criticism. And for once, I actually agree with it. I thought that her being killed was a very, very cheap way of moving the plot along, where I think they could have done it in a slightly better, more clever way than just...
I think they could have done it in a smarter way. I think that the stakes could have been high without that needing to have happened. Do you know what I mean? There is more to Deadpool. You know, he's shown to have some kind of compassion and heart in the first film, and they tried to get that across. And I think they could have developed upon that without having to do that. I agree. I think that's the flaw.
And especially with the ending, where after all that character development and all that soul searching, they just go, and now she's back. That's the kind of thing that we've said about before with things like The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. When you've got time travel, it's too easy to cheapen things that you've set up. They've set up Vanessa's death as being incredibly poignant. And, you know, it's given Wade this whole new streak of genuine hero status. And then he just goes, oh, but I'm just going to go back and save it. And for me, the rest of the post credits were brilliant, but that bit I genuinely groaned at, like, oh, why? It just undid 2 hours of film for me. And that's possibly why it came out feeling a little bit deflated.
I think it might
be.
That
was a real bitter taste.
It frustrates me when you can just hit the reset button. And it's that simple. Do you know what I mean?
It's just cheap.
Well, you know,
as Deadpool said a couple of times during the film, lazy story writing.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating thing for me, because they made this, you know, break the screen kind of approach to the film, which they always do in Deadpool. And he's talking to the audience and he's saying it's lazy writing quite regularly. You know, 3 times I think I counted. And that to me is the most lazy writing aspect of the film. Now, I'll give it, and we will come on to a lot of positives, because it's not all negative.
No, of course not.
And outside of that, to be genuinely honest, I thought it was a really good action film. You know, it's one of those where it felt like a really good popcorn film outside of that. I thought that the scenes, they'd up the stakes a lot in terms of the effects. Do you know what I mean? The budget is clearly so much higher for this film than the first film. If you go back and watch the first film, which we've all done quite a lot, but I've done quite recently, it's quite limited. Do you know what I mean? It's incredible for what it is, and it relies a lot more on the story and the script to get it by. But the budget is so minuscule.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
It was 70 million. I think this was about 100 and, let me have a look, 110. So, I mean, 110 by modern standards isn't huge, but compared to the other one, say,
25, 30 million on production elements, because the rest will go on cast and whatnot. But, you know, looking at that.
And you can see where the money's gone, because you've got a lot more Colossus. You've now got real Colossus fighting.
Juggernaut, you've got what do they call it? An epic CGI fight coming up.
That fight scene was absolutely brilliant, especially when Colossus went off book and turned into a shit. Like biting his thumb off and punching him in the bollocks.
You also had the kind of epic kind of chase scene through the streets, which there was nothing. I mean, there was one car scene where they clearly just used one part of a set or a motorway in the first film, whereas this actually had moving vehicles.
That was probably my favourite set piece, the bit where Domino's driving the
rig,
probably
the prisoner truck
scene in the whole film. Because Domino,
and even the prison was awesome as well. Yeah, she was. And I think we will, you know, this is us just being completely honest, and I think we both share quite similar opinions. The good thing about this is we've really not discussed this at all before coming on this podcast.
Because I only watched this last night. I got in about 11:30 and went
straight
to bed.
Yeah, and I watched it Saturday, so it's really fresh for us. This is probably the quickest we've ever reviewed something, to be fair.
Yeah, it is.
I still can see all the heart and love and everything that Ryan Reynolds puts into this project, because you can feel it in all the incredible marketing and effort that he goes to. He genuinely does a lot of things that I don't think he even gets paid for as such. Do you know what I mean? It's more than a role for him. It is him. Do you know what I mean? It's his character. It's his baby. He co-produced this. He co-wrote it.
This is the continuation of, you know, 10, 11 years of work. to get Deadpool going. And that, I remember we said in previous pods, that's one of the reasons why Deadpool, the first film, was so good, because it was a genuine labor of love. This wasn't just, oh, this script looks all right. Yeah, I'm in for this. This was Ryan Reynolds pushing, leaking test footage to whip up frenzy, doing all the viral marketing with like Mario Lopez, and this time round with Celine Dion. And
I would say this is a little bit like second album syndrome with a band. Is that fair?
Yeah,
you know,
I'd say so.
You know, and it's the same with a lot of people. So,
and especially when you think how, you know, Deadpool the first one was 750 million. It absolutely blew everyone's expectations out the water, because the expectations were so low for an R-rated superhero film. Now the bar has moved up so many notches. It was always going to be difficult to get the kind of range of reactions from, oh, it was good, right, to, oh my god, it was incredible, because people knew it was going to be at least very good. Whereas the first one, we had no frame of reference, did we? It could have been anything from amazing to a catastrophe.
I think that the big thing with the first film is it was, because it's so fresh, you know, it's like, and I again relate this to music. When you get a band and they've got a sound which sounds new, do you know what I mean? For you, when a band comes along and they knock you for six because it's a sound that you've probably has been rehashed, but not in your head. Do you know what I mean? It's original.
There's very few original bands, and
and Deadpool was an original.
Very few original films.
No, yeah, exactly. A lot of films we see, and we're huge fans of Marvel and lesser of recent DC. I must say, I've rewatched The Dark Knight recently. Fucking hell, it was incredible again.
I think I'm going to, having done the Warner Brothers tour on my honeymoon, because I've seen like all the Batman.
That's probably why I did. It's just so good, that film. Honestly, no wonder we hold that in such high regard. I mean, we did a Batman Begins pod, and we started out on the movie night doing a Dark Knight podcast. Honestly, it's levels above almost anything for me. And that's why it's so hard, like, to compete with now for DC. They're just really a mess at the minute. It's a
shame.
That's
why Christopher Nolan's sitting there on his gold-plated throne saying, nope, I'm never touching another superhero film as long as I live.
He's not
going to
go near it, exactly. But, off topic slightly, this was original. Deadpool 1 was fresh, it was unique, it was bold and brave, and it was something that, as much as we hyped it, and Jesus, did we hype it, it didn't drop below what I expected. It exceeded my expectations, which amazed me, actually. And this film, and I'm not going to be completely, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to go into sheep syndrome, because I did still really enjoy it, and I will start quoting lines from it, and we will both have a good laugh, because it is incredibly hilarious at times. And there were some really new characters that were really interesting, and I thought the casting was pitch perfect. I thought the production was really good as well.
When I got in before I went to bed, there was an article, and it was something like top 10 reasons why such and such a body else should have been cast as Cable, and I was thinking, why? Josh Brolin was brilliant.
Do you know how old Josh Brolin is?
He's
50. He is in. Do you know what we talk about on this podcast? So we talked about the kind of funny guys. So you've got, you know, Chris Pratt and Paul Rudd being, you kind of out of shape, relatable kind of guys. You've got Josh Brolin's 50 years old and he puts me to ridiculous shame. That guy is in the best shape of his career. Do you know what I mean? And
he made sure that they showed it off, because there was quite a few scenes where he was sat there with his shirt off. So I think his agent said that, he's gone, look, he's been pounding the iron for fucking months.
Exactly.
Can he have no vest on for this? But, you know, we need to show this shit off.
I just, fair play to the guy. And honestly, there was obviously a few references back to Thanos, which I thought was really clever.
It was a lot more meta than the first one. There was a lot more references to things like that.
It was a little bit less subtle, but it still worked, because, I mean, the gags back to Wolverine, and we'll go back to that moment at the beginning with the Wolverine music box, which is genuine. Ryan Reynolds has that in his flat.
Really?
Yes, his props team made that lovingly, which is just hilarious.
Because I said that to Tom, I was like, is that a do they exist? Can you buy them? Because I thought, well,
I know there is one, and he has it. And to be honest, I'd probably go to prison just to rob that out of his house because it is incredible. It is the coolest thing, and the references back to Wolverine that he makes throughout. The scene when Ryan Reynolds is long scene of death, you know, where it's just going on and on and on, which I thought was genius. You know, they kind of hint at that early doors that he says, you know, when he blows himself up, you know, fuck Wolverine, first he rides my coattails with an R rating, and then that hairy motherfucker ups the ante by dying. What a dick. Well, guess what, Wolvie? I'm dying in this movie. It told you what was going to happen, but it was done in such a way that, you know, I didn't know what to expect from this film. Like, I've watched a lot of the trailers. We kind of thought it would be a bit of an action caper. You kind of knew that Josh Brolin would be Cable as the bad guy, but I thought he would come around because of the comic theory that they're obviously friends and a partnership and a team. And if we're talking about Cable, I mean, like, perfect casting. He is, you know, I looked at Ron Perlman. I was like, Jesus, there's no way Ron Perlman was fitting that outfit at this stage of his career. Do you know what I mean? Did you look at other people? The one person that was really interesting, which I think is why he had a cameo, which was a brilliant cameo, is that Brad Pitt was approached to do it.
I was reading about the role yesterday.
Casting issues, yeah.
And they he said...
I'm not casting, like, he had scheduling issues.
But he said he wanted to be... Ryan wanted him to be involved in some way, shape, or form. And do you know what Brad Pitt, his stipulation was to be in it? He took him down to Starbucks and got him a coffee. So that's all he got paid.
He did. That's all he got paid. Yeah, and he was on set for 7 minutes, and apparently it was like post production, so there's hardly anyone around. No one knew about it. It's just a handful of people.
But there were rumors, and I will be gobsmacked if those rumors weren't started by a certain Mr. Reynolds himself. There were rumors that there was an A-list celebrity making a cameo.
Yeah.
And nobody, I saw loads of theories, and everyone thought that it was Hugh Jackman, either as Wolverine or...
I'm so glad it wasn't Hugh Jackman, you know.
I was kind of hoping it was going to be Hugh Jackman as himself, though, and like Deadpool meets him on the street or something and starts turning into like a giggling schoolgirl, and he's like, what are you on about? You
know, I think that will come within the future. I don't think we'll get through another Deadpool film without Hugh Jackman being there in one shape or another.
He's even said he'd do it as well. Hugh Jackman has said he would do it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he would. I mean, you know, we're talking cameos, so there's a couple of other ones. The main one is the X-Men cameo when he's back in the house. I've got to say, when he's riding around on Professor X's wheelchair, I was in fits, man. That absolutely cracked me up.
That was already broken when it fell there. For some reason, has just come back to my head. And then he's feeling up Colossus really when he's cuddling him.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. But the X-Men cameo, where they're all there. And again, it's just something that they kind of did for them. Obviously, they are part of the same universe in a way, slightly transformed off from that. And it's funny because you've got McAvoy there, and then he's talking about Patrick Stewart's, you know, the helmet thing that he wears, you know, that reeks of Patrick Stewart or whatever he says.
Yeah, and he's pretending.
And it's just funny because if you try to keep up with the timeline or anything going on in this bloody film relating to X-Men or anything else, you just wouldn't have a clue. It does what it does, and it doesn't really care about anything. Do you know what I mean? No care at all about what is going on outside of it. And I mean, I think we'll come back to talk about X-Force a little bit later because there is a bit to talk about. That said, bar the X-Men cameo, which I thought was a really good touch, and they all just subtly shut the door behind him, which I thought was cool. There was quite a few new characters.
Most of whom won't stick.
Well, certainly not, because they all mostly got killed off, except Yukio, who had a very... you know, strange relationship with Deadpool, them just saying hi to each other occasionally.
Yeah, hi Will, hi Yukio.
Yeah, she did. Again, she was kind of there, but a little bit pointless. Negasonic Teenage Warhead, again, not
I was
greatly
really surprised
involved.
That Negasonic was scaled down, but I think they scaled her down because they had to scale Colossus up for the personal side of it, for the friendship and the almost
really
creepy romance that they've got going on. And it is very fucking creepy between them.
It's just Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds, isn't it, really? It just feels like that. He's like Colossus is the opposite of him in lots of ways. He's all moral compass and everything, and then it's just Wade trying to make him break that, basically.
I never thought I'd see anyone in a superhero film get electrocuted with a cable up their arse. That was something special as well.
That was quite a shock, actually. I thought even for Deadpool, that was quite a bold thing to do. So that did surprise
you
me slightly.
All these decapitations and limbs being removed, but you never thought you'd see Juggernaut's butt crack.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, talking of that, I'm not a Colossus, not a butt crack.
I've really not got anything else to say about
butt crack. No, I really don't have much else to say on that. But talking of like the action and the limbs and stuff, there was a lot more to it, even in the opening sequence. And I think the problem with that death, which took everyone a bit by surprise, before that point, when he's using every knife in the knife block, was quite humorous. And after that, and before that, you had those kind of great leading scenes where he's Hong Kong and he's battling all these different, you know, armies as such, which was cool. And then you had this kind of Bond-esque, Celine Dion-backed sequence, which was great.
Was unbelievably good.
Yeah, it was really well done. It was probably the thing that had the most production, you know, it's such a sequence that was done for it. And you had the Celine Dion track, which she's just got to a point of her career. I don't think she gives a shit, which is great because funny.
She's had a residency in Vegas for about the last millennium.
Exactly.
I think she's just been given the keys to the Bank of America, and she just goes and helps herself now whenever she needs a couple of, you know, bars of gold bullion or something. She just doesn't give a shit. Have you seen the video for that song?
Yes.
Oh my God. And that's another part of their viral marketing that they've done. All of a sudden, there's just, oh, Celine Dion, and they didn't tell anyone that, you know, it was a silly video. So I saw loads of people that had given up and going, oh, Celine Dion singing, what's this for? And you're like, have you actually watched the whole thing, you know, when he comes in? And like, no. I was like, well, fucking go back and watch it then. Did you actually think that was it? It's a Deadpool video, and you think that it's just Celine Dion singing.
Yeah,
you might.
You can never trust. It's just going to be, and nothing is conventional where Deadpool's concerned. And again, leading up to this, the marketing has been just so on point as always. They really do know how to get to people in the right kind of ways. Do you know what I mean? I just thought it's been really good build up to it. I think one of the issues with it is you're coming off the back of Infinity War, and that is such a heavy hitting film for so many ways.
Because
you've
everyone's
got
emotions,
you've got deaths
dead
that may get reversed in a year's time, but some that won't. And it did feel a lot heavier, and it felt a lot bolder. And then you come onto this, which should be comic relief, but it feels a bit too soon for me. You know, you've got this, and you've got Solo, and it just feels like I probably could have done with another month. Wait, and then I would have been more in the headspace for Deadpool. I know that sounds a bit.
I actually kind of agree, because I was really rushed, because we went and watched Infinity War, and we you know, because Tom's got a family, we can't just, you know, do things week after week after week. So we had to wait for this one. So it did feel a little bit rushed for me. So I must admit, if it was only out at the, say, you know, another 2 or 3 weeks, I probably would have been happy with that. Because like you say, it sounds really stupid, but I am still processing Infinity War, watching videos, reading articles and formulating theories and stuff like that. And
you do soak things up a lot afterwards. And I think, to be fair, Infinity War, we did two pretty epic podcasts. You can go and listen to those.
And thank you to everyone that already has and has given us some cracking feedback, because these things have gone down really well.
Yeah, they really were. We really enjoyed doing those with Marco Lopez. A whole lot of fun and a lot of exploring to do in those kind of worlds. But that is still ongoing. Do you know what I mean? It feels like the whole of the hype on the media train and everything we would follow on social media, outside of Liverpool Football Club, who have a slightly big game this weekend. is basically talking still about Infinity War and what's to come in Avengers 4 and talking about, you know, just everything around that subject matter, a little bit of Ant-Man and the Wasp and bits and pieces of Hawkeye and all, everything is theory this and theory that.
This is really off topic for once. Did you get the trailer for that Jeremy Renner film before?
Yes.
The one with the adult. That looks fucking hilarious.
Is it called Tag?
Yeah. And we were like,
do you know what?
We were like, this is what Hawkeye's been doing while the rest of the world's been getting wiped out. That film looks so funny.
I know. Do you know what? I heard some hype about the trailer and I was like, oh, fuck, that sounds shit. I'm not watching this. And then it was on in the cinema and I thought, this is genius. And then when I saw it was based on a true story, I loved the idea that there's the group of guys or girls who've done this for years and years and years and years. I think it's brilliant.
And the cast as well. Ed Helms, Jeremy Renner, John Hamm. I love John Hamm.
Yeah, John Hamm's great.
Isla Fisher, Rashida Jones, Leslie Bibb. I was going, I think I'm probably going to go watch that. I'm more excited to watch that than Solo.
I will go and watch that. I think it'll be a whole lot of fun. And there's always room for a comedy.
Especially stupid comedies like that.
There was a Renner line in this, or a Hawkeye line, which I will repeat. It's when they're in the prison and he's got his collar on, which basically reduces his powers to nothing. With this collar on, my superpower is just unbridled cancer. Give me a bow and arrow and I'm basically Hawkeye. I mean...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Jesus, you know, he, there's no shame there. There's no shame. Also in the prison, while we're doing quotes, Cable says, "Dubsteps for pussies. You're so dark. Are you sure you're not from the DC universe?" And I know that's on the trailer and I know it's been banded around, but I still think it's really clever. There was a Martha line in there as well, wasn't there, in the film at one stage?
Yeah, well, it was something like, we fought this other guy. Oh, yeah, it was when he was explaining to Vanessa and he said, I fought this other guy, and it turned out his mum's name was Martha as well.
Yeah.
So a lot more meta. And I did read in a lot of the build-up to it that they were going to be going after DC a little bit more. Did you know that all the way through the credits was all taking the piss out of the fact that Vanessa had just died?
Yes.
Like, presented by What the Fuck, produced by DJ.
Oh, really, it was really good, that. Really good. And that's the thing, man. When you talk about more like this, and I think I will watch this film quite a few more times, as expected, I'll probably get past that opening, but that does jar, that opening. And I think you're right. I think the pacing's a bit off at the first 20 minutes. I like the X-Men house stuff, but it did feel a little bit off. And then he's in the trainee thing, and then goes to rescue Ricky Baker, who I can't think of anything else than Ricky Baker in Hunt for the World of People, but he's Russell in this, isn't he? The kid, Julian Dennison. And he didn't get much to work with. He plays Ricky Baker, if you'll see Hunt for the Wilder People, essentially, in this film again. But he's quite a likeable kid, and I think he plays it quite well. He gives Wade at least something to kind of emotionally hold on to, do you know what I mean? And try and rescue something in his basically shattered existence at that point of the film. And I thought the prison scene was pretty cool. You get to meet Black Tom, who is an incredible source of an on-running joke. You mentioned he was going to have a much bigger role, which is a bit of a shame, actually, because I think the guy's quite a cool actor. He's done some good stuff.
Well, he's an interesting character as well, and apparently he was supposed to be the main antagonist, and he was going to be spurring Fire Fist on, but they decided that if they did that, there was going to be too many.
I think when you look at the other scenes in there as well, I think the budget started to lean away from the prison, maybe, because it didn't last long, did it? Let's be honest. You've got the cable fight scene, which came in quite quickly. And it moved straight on towards the cable story pretty quickly, and the heist kind of, you know, getaway prison truck. And it all moves a pretty quick pace at that point. Do you know what I mean? You get introduced to this kind of X-Force, who kind of ultimately weren't an X-Force. But yeah, you didn't get enough of that. But I'm being honest, the best jokes throughout it, perhaps bar the tiny legs and the post credits, were probably to do with Black Tom and the Deadpool references to Cable that he's basically racist.
Oh yeah.
Because it just kept coming up, and it just kept getting me every time. And I need to read the one about when he killed him. Was it, "You've killed Black Tom, you racist son of a bitch"? Yeah. And then towards the end, when you get back to your family, you tell them Wade says hi, and promise me one thing, that you'll start judging people not by their color of the skin, but the content of their character.
Yeah.
He's just basically called him a racist throughout the film, just because he killed off Black Tom, who was a white guy. And there's a bit where he asks about Black Tom, someone does or mentions him, and he's like, "Yeah, he's some African-American black dude." It's like, no, he's a white Irish guy in the comics and in the film. I just thought it was like
one of the better lines has just come back to me in the prison fight scene. "Who are you?" "I'm Batman." And another DC line.
There's quite a lot of DC elements in there. Yeah, there are. We talked a little bit, or skirted around the X-Force a little bit, but I think we should talk about them in more detail. But they really did surprise me with this. So the preface on the X-Force is that they're interviewed by Deadpool and TJ Miller.
Weasel.
They could have killed him off, because he really didn't do anything in this film. And he's a bit of a source of...
Well, supposedly that there was a lot of...
Is it because of his sexual exploits outside of the film?
There was a lot of pressure for him to be sort of reshot or something. So
they could have killed him off. People would have been happy.
I actually expected that he was going to be killed off.
Yeah, it would have made more sense, because, you know, than Vanessa. But anyway... they interview everyone except Dapinda. Is it Dapinda? His favorite taxi driver friend, who is desperate to become a superhero, and ultimately gives you another one of the best scenes, which is him hiring Peter, who just replies to the ad. I think, again, the marketing around Peter, where he's had his own Twitter page just as Peter the whole period.
Oh, actually, I haven't even seen that.
Yeah, I'll link you. It's just him, and it's been going long before the movie came out. And right. It's just this guy as Peter being this normal guy, and then joins up with Deadpool and the X-Force. It's really funny. And he also was in one of the screenings with the whole cast. So they all went for this big screening, big kind of fan screening event. And Peter was dressed up as himself. The guy, I can't remember the actor's name.
Rob Delaney.
Rob Delaney was in full Peter outfit, and he was in the audience the whole time. And then he came down on stage and got introduced, and everyone else was normal, and he was in character the whole time. So they've really nailed that kind of side of things. I thought he, and then Dapinda's line about, you know, what superpowers you have and none, and Dapinda just goes absolutely fucking crazy. I thought it was really funny. and you had Terry Crews in there that he wasn't used. And it was like, oh man, he's been waiting for a break for so long since he's kind of, you know, exploded for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and he's talked openly about not getting many parts and finding it difficult in Hollywood. And he gets a, what is, what, 2 minutes in this film? 3 minutes?
Something along those
Does
lines.
Does he get a line? One line? Two lines? It's a bit sad.
He got a few lines on the plane.
Yeah.
And then I don't think he got anything when he landed.
No.
I mean, so no. I'm a bit surprised by some of them. Like, I knew that you knew that Domino was going to stick around because they made
Yeah, you've seen the trailer.
Of Zazie Beetz and stuff.
Yeah, and she's awesome. We'll get back to that.
Of the X-Force people might have... I thought Terry Crews one might have stuck around and maybe Shatterstar, because Shatterstar's a reasonable character, and I think he was...
Yeah, who was the guy spitting horrible stuff?
Guys.
I just thought, who the fuck is this guy when he came on the screen? Do you know what I mean? I thought, that guy's not sticking around.
Who was it?
So the invisible dude. So there's Brad Pitt as the invisible.
Oh, I forget what his bloody name is.
Yeah, I forget what they're all called.
Vanisher.
Vanisher, yeah. And you've got Vanisher, you've got Terry Crews' one.
Bedlam.
Bedlam, yeah. You've got Shatterstar, who he says good news and bad news. Bad news, the whole team is dead. The good news is I don't think anyone's going to miss Shatterstar. He was a bit of a prick.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really funny. And you've got Peter, who, yeah, and obviously Domino. Peter was, it is a great moment. You know, when he jumps out of the plane and he's
well,
just...
Well, when he,
you
know, when he sits on the edge and gently lowers
yeah,
himself
he kicks
out
him
the
out,
plane.
Basically. Yeah, I thought it was good. But just the reference to High Winds, like it's going to be a big deal. There are this team of like elite superheroes and they just get affected by the weather slightly. It's just hilarious. I thought that scene was really, really clever. But it was a bit disappointing in the same instance. But we got Domino, and she is obviously the breakout from this. We talk about how good Cable was, and I think we'll get a lot more interplay between Cable and Deadpool in forthcoming attractions. But for this film, Domino was just great. I thought her look, which is deemed not superpower, led to some of the best action in the film by far, probably less yeah. than the best action sequences.
I thought she was absolutely amazing. She was my favourite thing about the whole film. All of yeah. her scenes, she looked brilliant.
She looked perfect. She was a bit, do you know what? It was a bit like Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie, where she just rocks up and she's the coolest thing about the film. Do you know what I mean? And as much as I love Ragnarok, Tessa Thompson almost steals it because she's just badass. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you,
she's
you
got
notice
a swagger,
that.
Hasn't she?
Yeah. And it's the same kind of thing. It's just, you know, had a swagger and her superpower, which just works so, so effectively in this film. And
if you think about it, it is actually an incredibly good power. When I first heard about Domino, I sort of went, well,
yeah,
I
everyone did.
Deadpool was like, luck is not a superpower, but they,
yeah, exactly.
In a brilliant way, they explained it really well. Someone draws a gun on her, the gun happens to misfire. She gets thrown out of a truck. She's not even bothered because she knows she's going to land, and she happens to land in the giant inflatable panda.
Yeah, and exactly.
Her power makes her the perfect mercenary because, in theory, nothing can go wrong on her mission. You know, if she falls off a building, she's going to land in a pool. You know, if someone throws something at it, it's going to, like, bounce off a shelf and hit them in the face. She was a
almost,
fantastic
she's almost indestructible. Yeah, she is. And she's a fantastic character to introduce to kind of Deadpool because he's almost the same. I mean, his powers for this film are there, but they're dampened quite heavily when he's obviously got the collar. He's got no powers and he's just subjected to the pure torture of that unrelenting
and
cancer.
And her powers as well make her, and this isn't a criticism, this is a compliment, although a lot of people would use this as a, you know, to beat someone down. It makes her quite slapstick. But the slapstick comedy works well in a Deadpool film. If you did that in an Avengers film,
oh,
it would look
work.
Stupid. If you do it in a Deadpool film, you know, guy, you know, misfires his gun and things like that, it just works in the context of R-rated Deadpool.
Yeah, and the fact we've talked about fight scenes as well, though, and fight scene training as well. But she was really on point, man. Her action scenes were really well done.
She did a lot of that herself, I believe. And like, yeah, the bit when and she was in the
did
hospital,
it so well.
Where she, took I mean,
when they
reference
what do they call her, the Black Widow, he calls her
the Black Widow, yeah.
And she does have that kind of traits of same kind of fighting style, which is really cool. That kind of close up front fighting style. But obviously that look on her side.
I think Domino is like really, really well trained. I think she is like special forces. She's an excellent marksman. She's good with knives and swords and all kinds of things. Yeah. So you can see.
And
in
I
the
was
exports.
Really glad that they gave her enough screen time, but also kind of made her really effective for the team because she was really prominent in the film, as it turned out. Do you know what I mean? Without her, everyone else died. So
he gave her that, you know, few minutes as well when they get back to the home. They really humanized her as well when she said, "Oh, you know, I lived here." Oh, well, when I say lived, you know, I mean they tortured me. And, you know, that really brought her down. And then
it didn't need a lot to do that as well. That was better writing. I mean, her part and her script and her in general was probably the best written part of the film because as a character, she was really solid. I think Cable, they got to grips with, but initially you kind of don't. But I would say Cable looked awesome. His shield was really cool. His gun, which goes up to 11, is just badass.
Yeah, I spotted that as well. I bet that went past a lot of people.
Yeah, I spotted that. I thought it was great. And there were some really good moments. And when he came to, is it Blind Al?
Yeah.
He comes to Blind Al's house, doesn't he? And they're all basically drawing their guns and she's obviously pointing the other way, which is always hilarious.
Oh,
we get to the funniest moment. Yeah, funniest moment of the film, which is the tiny legs and the tiny dick.
Oh, babe. See, it's been just over 2 years since I changed my Twitter handle to Small Hands Jig, and now I'm really debating going for baby legs.
You didn't have the same ring to it, but
that,
yeah.
That bit, I was genuinely crying. And when they were talking about him baby
when they did the basic instinct, you know, when he crosses his legs and then he says, "Don't uncross them." just like, oh my
then,
God.
Oh, and then when he gets up and he stands and he's walking and they're all going, he's doing it. Come on, little guy, you can do it. Oh my Lord. There wasn't many people in the screen with us. There was only about 8 or 9 people, but everyone was crying, laughing. If you were to watch that in a full room, like if you'd watched that in a full cinema in America where everyone's a lot more over the top anyway, that would just be one hell of an experience. You know, another 100-150 people all laughing at the same time, like that would be something else.
I would like to, I don't think I will, but I would quite like to go and see this again with a packed screen because it does make a hell of a difference to experience because I saw Guardians 2 like completely packed out at the cinema once and then it was dead the next time because it's quite a lot later. And the first time when it's packed out and everyone's absolutely wetting themselves at all the Drax jokes and everything really does make a massive difference, I think, to your experience. Does. It really does. I think a quiet
audience...
That's
one of the reasons why I loved Infinity War first time so much. I really grew to love the Americanized viewing.
Yeah, you said,
with,
man.
With all the whooping and the hollering and the cheering. I actually missed it this time
around. I think deep down you're a bit of a woo girl yourself, aren't you? I think
everyone's
somewhere in there.
A bit of a woo girl.
I think everyone's got a little bit of Shabotsky in there.
Yeah, see, I got the reference.
I know, I'm glad.
All you need to do is take me to a Western bar and get me a Stetson and I'll get on the mechanical bull.
Nice. I recently watched that, otherwise I wouldn't remember that. But it all links in. She's Agent Hill in Avengers.
Yeah, see, it's not off topic.
It's not off topic. That moment is when Cable has his fanny pack, basically, isn't it? At that point, as Americans would call it, bum bag.
He's a lip balm.
Yeah, and that was just, it humanized Cable. It made him such a different character all of a sudden. Because before that point, he's just a badass kind of killing machine. He looks a bit like Terminator, doesn't he, with his red eye and stuff, because he's traveled from the future. Oh. And at that point, you're like, what are you on about the John Connor?
You know the bit when he materializes those two guys that are stood at the truck. I forget who the second one was, but the first one's Matt Damon.
Matt Damon, and I think it's the guy who does all the voices. I can only think he's in Dodgeball as the pirate, Steve the pirate, Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
So I need to go back to see that as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Matt Damon follows up his cameo in Thor Ragnarok.
He's nailing it with his cameos, man. Someone give him a part. He could do a role.
You know how he's doing this? He's well trying to get in the good books of the Marvel execs.
I could see him as something. You know, he's a good guy, with Matt Damon. I've got a lot of time for him.
I'd love to see Alan Tudyk in it because I absolutely fucking love him.
He's one of the best voices, you know. I mean, it's strange, but he voices the villain in the first Wreck-It Ralph film. But he's very good at voices. I will never forget some of the stuff he does. He does a lot of animated work, but
yeah, he'll always be Steve the Pirate.
Yeah, he will always be Steve the Pirate. You can't get past that. I want to find the quote about his chapstick.
I was actually just looking at it.
Oh, come on.
You know one thing
Something from my utility bag. It's a goddamn fanny pack, and you know it, you sick son of a bitch.
Yeah.
The difference is night and day. And then there's a later on scene when he's putting on lip gloss.
Yeah.
I can't find it.
I had it before.
Cable also has a great line where he says, "You're not a fucking hero. You're just an annoying clown dressed up as a sex toy." Which Brolin delivers with such a great tone of voice, to be honest, man.
Did you notice at the end when Deadpool had been blown up, did you notice what had happened to his suit?
It turned grey, I've read that.
Yeah, which...
Like X-Force.
It turned into his X-Force suit, and I got that, and I was going, look at it, look at his suit, look at his suit.
Yeah.
And I was like,
there's a lot of kind of Easter eggs in this. I mean, there's Easter egg...
I've found it.
...everywhere, isn't there?
Cable says, you remind me of my wife, waiters. I'm sorry. And Cable says, I said, you remind me. He goes, no, I'm sorry that you said that while making heavy eye contact and applying lip balm.
That is just genius. Their relationship's obviously quite interesting. And ultimately, and we could talk about the Juggernaut fight scene and how that comes to pass in a minute. But ultimately, he goes back to save his life. And it's quite a moment because...
I've just found another good quote.
Go on, hit me.
And Deadpool, you know what you need to do? We need to build a fucking team. We need them tough, morally flexible, and young enough they can carry this franchise 10 to 12 years. Dopinder, my body is an instrument of death. Deadpool, not now, Dopinder.
What does Dopinder say at the end of the film when he runs over the paedophile?
Wasn't it something like, it was something about bathing in the blood of his enemies or...
Bastard. He's talking about, you know, at the beginning with the taxi scene with him when Deadpool jumps through the window and he's in the front and he's talking about, you know, when I could be a hitman, a hired hitman or something. And he said, you know, I stole, I can't remember what he calls his cousin. He's like, we both know you Bantu. Killed him. Yeah, we both know you killed him or something. It's like, Jesus Christ. Bantu. That, I mean, he was such a surprisingly lovely part of the first film, and I think he still had a nice role in this, to be fair. And his just frustrated angle when he's there, you know, mopping the floors in the bar and stuff. He's literally
mopping the piss up.
Are you
taking a piss? You're doing the face.
A lot happened in this film, considering, you know, there was a lot of slow moments, as you said, but then it did up the ante quite a lot. And they did, like we said, we got that big fight scene towards the end. We got, I don't know if he's not called Firestorm, I'm getting, what's the kid called?
Fire Fist.
Yeah. We did get moments of, go on.
He's on top of you, he's going in through the back. Oh God, he's inside, and Domino says, you can hear yourself, right? I'm going to stop looking at quotes now because it's just going to make me keep giggling.
I know, and that's the thing with it all.
I inherited the giggle off me dad, by the way, so blame him for the fact
that
I sound like Homer Simpson.
It's a charming Homer Simpson giggle.
Somebody said that to me when we were on honeymoon. I was laughing at something, and someone turned around and said something like, "That's a really good laugh."
That's were they American?
Yes, obviously. No British person would say that. They would have hit.
No, they would have probably just like laughed behind your back at your laugh.
My very girly, effeminate laugh.
Yeah, you know, a slightly girly laugh.
Well, I am a woo girl.
You are, exactly. We have exposed your true nature on this podcast.
You won't expose it that much.
Not that much, no. Jesus. Yeah. One thing Reynolds said when he was interviewed, we were talking about tweets, and he's obviously quite good at tweeting and quite honest about everything. He said if he'd seen his draft emails, his draft inbox on his Twitter, he'd probably be arrested.
Some of the things he comes out with, the things he says about his kid and about his wife, are so funny.
Was he married to Scarlett Johansson? I think I read that today on IMDb.
I don't know whether he was he married? I know the.
I think they're divorced. I think they're divorced, which surprised me. I didn't know that.
Let's have a look on his Wikipedia at the spouses section. Yeah, he was. Yeah, they got divorced in 2011.
That's quite recent.
I only found out yesterday that he used to go out with Alanis Morissette.
Did he really?
Well, yeah, but you know, when you're a Canadian,
I'm not going to make an ironic joke. There was a lot of good
someone else who's Canadian because
a lot of good Canadian jokes. Again, a lot of good pro-Canadian stuff and anti-Canadian stuff, which is obviously very much related to Reynolds, which I thought was really good. The quotes aren't all there in terms of you could read them out all day and we could be here all night, but I think parts of the script were really, really solid. I think parts of the writing were a little bit lazy, which they hinted at, obviously, or openly expressed, which I found a little bit frustrating. And I do think the budget was a little bit stretched at times. Do you know who voiced the Juggernaut?
Ryan Reynolds.
It was indeed.
I found that out just before I went in, and I didn't know that it was Juggernaut, but somebody had said it was that, in inverted commas, cameo, was voiced by Ryan
They ran out of money. Ran out of money.
And you can see why, because doing full CGI fight scene that lasted a fair amount of time and all the extra CG from Fire Fist.
I was going to say, the Fire Fist stuff looked pretty cool. You had some good fight scenes at that moment.
And he used his powers a lot. Did you also notice the name of the place where Julian was held?
No.
Not Julian.
Yeah,
that's his actual name. Russell. It was another hint to Mr. Sinister.
Oh, was it?
I forget the name. Is it... Jesus Christ. Nathan... something. Essex.
Okay.
The house was called like the Essex something or other, Essex Institute or something like that. So me and Tom thought that little Weasley bald guy with the glasses was going to be Mr. Sinister and he'd sort of disguised himself somehow.
Yeah, no. There is a line around that only best buddies execute paedophiles together. Yeah. which is just genius. I think one of the better scenes, and we'll go on to talk about post-credit and X-Force quite quickly, is the dying scene. Now, it could have easily been too long because it was going that way, but I really liked it, and it didn't quite get to the point where everyone was getting really impatient with him.
It wasn't,
but
like
it was leading that way.
Peter falls over and bangs his knee.
That way in the right possible kind of frame of mind, and it wasn't quite Lord of the Rings, the final film that had three endings. You know, it didn't fade to black or anything, but I thought it was really well done. And I've heard Monty Python mentioned a few times, and it definitely had hints of that. Do you know what I mean? It's definitely that classic old school kind of comedy to things where.
But that's the
slapstick
thing
almost going.
Again. And I love slapstick comedy. That's why I like things like Modern Family. Because Ty Burrell, the guy that plays Phil, is just the king of physical and slapstick comedy at the minute.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what we said about Deadpool, it's a little bit about what we said about Guardians 2, is I think that when it's really on song is when it's almost not about the plot. Do you know what I mean? It's just the characters, you know, having fun, basically, and what it feels like. So in Guardians 2, it's when Star-Lord's calling Rocket a trash bander and they keep arguing. It's when the scenes with Baby Groot and him going and finding the severed toe and all that kind of jazz. Do you know what I mean? And he's talking about hats and why he hates hats so much. All that kind of stuff. And it's when the plot almost is forgotten. Do you know what I mean? And I think Deadpool 1 was so much about him becoming Deadpool and a little bit about saving Vanessa and getting revenge, but there wasn't any plot there. Do you know what I mean? It was quite a simple premise. This film isn't heavy on premise. It's not, don't get me wrong, it's not Infinity War. There's not a lot going on. But when it gets a bit overcomplicated in itself, like the first 20 minutes, it kind of loses what it's about. And I think that's maybe what it was lacking a bit. Although I would say that some people, and I agree with this, you do need to introduce more characters, because I don't think you want just 120 minutes of Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool
joking. You can't just have another film that's just Deadpool him. And then occasionally he goes and talks to Weasel, and then there's a little bit in the taxi with Dipinder, because that would be boring. You have to build the roster. And that's why I was talking with someone on Twitter before, and I hadn't heard anything about a Deadpool 3, but now I have. They are working on a Deadpool 3, but the plan
100% will happen.
They're going to do... They don't know whether it's going to be X-Force, then Deadpool 3, or
X-Force
1 and 2, and give solo Deadpool a bit of time. But I think I would much rather see more X-Force, because I much prefer the Deadpool with ultra-serious Cable, who's a bit of a dick, and then Domino, who seems to be quite easygoing. Again, going back to her powers, because nothing can really happen to her. She seems to be quite blasé about things, in a good way. So I like the dynamic between them, because they're all so different. But together, you can see that they probably will make a really, really good team, because Deadpool can't die. Domino essentially can't die. And Cable is so augmented that it makes him so strong and so fast, and the weapons and the tech. You know, they're a lot more together than you'd think. And that final scene where you see them walking towards the screen, that's probably going to be, you know, 3/5 of X-Force. I imagine they're going to bring in some of the other proper X-Force characters. Who, I wouldn't like to say, but...
No, it's way too early to speculate. But there is some scope there, and I think if they get the balance right, an X-Force movie would be less about Deadpool, that's the thing, and it would be interesting how they got that dynamic right, because he does overshadow everything. It's his style, do you know what I mean? So, but I think they could do that. I think it could work.
It is going to be difficult, because what they need to do is
separate it from Deadpool. You know?
They need to make an X-Force film that doesn't feel like a Deadpool film, which is one thing that we said was so good about, say, Civil War. Civil War felt like it was an everyone film, but the plot at the very, very centre of it was all Cap and Bucky. You
know, very, very cleverly done.
Very, very solid right through the centre. That's what they need to get with X-Force, is they need to get, you know, Deadpool and Cable and Domino and, you know, XYZ. That's the core of it. And then
Infinity War, just on a side note, Infinity War was very much the Thanos film, which we've said.
Yeah.
I think Avengers 4 has to be an Avengers film. You know what I mean? The one thing really lacking a little bit was you want to see Cap and Iron Man together. You want that camaraderie.
It's currently sitting at $1.843 billion.
It'll top two, but it won't get to Avatar or Titanic, but it's going to finish in third, I think, over all time. But, I mean, for nowadays, man, when you've got all these big releases like Solo and Deadpool and everything else,
it's coming up,
and everyone tries
Awakens.
To pirate everything, and do you know what I mean? It's a different era. I think $2 billion is incredible. Incredible feat, and it broke all these records. And I think the film next year will just be just as equally impressive, if not more numbers. What was I going to say? Yeah, let's talk post credits, because arguably, bar that one moment we mentioned, they are the best and funniest thing about this film.
All the people that were in the cinema, which admittedly, again, wasn't that many, but when you saw that old Wolverine footage from the Wolverine. Everyone went, what? Or there was like, you could hear you could hear and feel the excitement in everyone's face.
Yeah.
And when he's just emptying the clip into shit, Deadpool just.
I would say as well, man, that scene was apparently so hard to get hold of. The footage was on film, so old school, not digital, and the original footage, original film had been damaged, so they had to find. I had to find like a copy of it, which was really hard to do apparently. So, they really worked to get that scene in the film, and I'm really glad they did. And we also had the killing of Reynolds signing the contract, for Green Lantern,
which I'm sure for him felt quite cathartic.
Yeah, there's a lot of jokes in the first film back to Green Lantern. There's a lot of piss taking, and it's been something that defined his career a little bit, because it spurned him on probably to do this film.
And also introduced him to his, you know, his now wife / mother of his kids / partner in crime, because they are a pretty good comedy duo, the two.
Yeah, they really are. So yeah, it's obviously a big moment. You had him bringing back Peter, which I thought was brilliant.
Oh,
what do you call him? Sugar Bear.
He saved his Sugar Bear, and he was calling himself Mama Bear, which was kind of typically Deadpool creepy.
Typically Deadpool creepy. There was a few of those moments in this film when he was squeezing Colossus's ass. That's basically the big one for me. And then he also brought back Vanessa. Was that it, or was there any more? We also have, and I need to get this a copy of this, the Colossal song. Not Colossal song, Juggernaut.
The Juggernaut song, Colossal. Yeah.
Yeah, the Juggernaut song.
Where it's basically just saying, holy shit, or something.
Holy shit, here he comes, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's just, it's this kind of orchestra.
And the Juggernaut was great for one simple reason. It wasn't Vinnie Jones.
Oh, thank Christ for that.
Or another reason he didn't say, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
I'm Juggernaut.
Oh, God. Because I love Juggernaut, because he was one of the major villains for the X-Men cartoon. If it wasn't Magneto episode and it wasn't Mr. Sinister, it was a Juggernaut episode, and they were always
brilliant.
He was
a badass. I really liked him as a character. And I think, to be fair, they CG'd him really well.
It didn't look rubbery or anything. And they didn't, too much down into the whole, the unstoppable, you know, once he starts running, you can't stop him. They just left him there as just a big, strong fucker. And I like that. They didn't try to explain away. Because if you don't know who Juggernaut is, all you know
there's been
now,
a lot of talks lately about the powers and dampening down powers and all this and the other. There's obviously talks about Thanos and Captain America and how he can hold his hand open and stuff. But you've got to accept that they can't do things exactly like for like in the comic book.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Because Captain Marvel can't just come in and just be all conquering and powerful. She's got to have some flaws and weaknesses. Do you know what I mean? You can't just make her superhuman and that's that, because it wouldn't translate very well. You need a bit of a balance in these films, because they're films, they're not comic books. Do you know what I mean? They've got to have a differential. And you're right, Juggernaut was one where you've got to get the balance right. And I guess the same with Deadpool, where he's got the collar that makes him invincible again, rather than being, you know, unkillable.
And you've got to think as well that's potentially budget related as well, because at least then you can rely on the practical effects, because people don't seem to realize every time Deadpool's got his mask on, they still have to use CG on the eyes and the mouth.
There was a lot more Wade, I guess, in this film.
There was a lot more. Because originally, when they first started shooting the original film, they didn't CG the mouth. And Ryan Reynolds was talking, and basically the mouth wasn't real. You couldn't follow what he was saying. So they CG his mouth to exaggerate the movements. And obviously you see his eye hole sort of opening when he's shocked and like closing when he's frowning and stuff. So they sort of, you know, accentuate his facial movement.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's
for me, genuinely speaking, I thought it was a really solid action film. I thought with a solid comedic action film. I don't like the depth that they tried to go to. I think it really played against Deadpool and what makes Deadpool Deadpool. But outside of that, I still really enjoyed it. I think at times it was hilarious, man. It really was, and it'll always keep me laughing. But I think, like you, I think you got to look to the strength of the original. I think this one has upped the ante in terms of the action stakes, which were great. They've introduced some new characters, not all perfectly successfully, because they didn't give them all much to do. But overall, I think it's still a really positive film, and I think it's still probably going to go in the right direction as a franchise. But
I mean, it's still doing well commercially. It's already taken $355 million. It had a brilliant opening weekend of about
It's probably going to top a billion, and that's a massive success for, again, a small budget film in the relatively, you know, grand scheme of things. Do you know what I mean? That's exactly what they'd be craving, you know. So I think, yeah, it's a big plus. I give Ryan Reynolds lots of props for it, because it is hard to make these films. They are very unique and they're very different to what we're used to. So, you know, they're not for everyone. And I know a lot of people that love the first one that maybe don't love this one. But then I know a lot of people that are talking this up as being better than the original, like a lot of people.
I would say 95% of people that I've watched that have come back and said.
Yeah, I'd say critically not, because people have got the same issues as those when they maybe analyse things in detail, but it's just a popcorn film and and that state, and many people just really like it. And the action does, you know, I did really enjoy it. I love that kind of car chase scene. I thought it was really, really good. And I did enjoy it. But yeah, I do have a few niggles, which I might get past, but I might not. Because like you said, it does change perspectives when it can just turn the clock back at the end of the film. And
I'm just looking down all-time worldwide box office. The first Deadpool film took more than Guardians did.
Yeah, it's because everything's growing, man. I mean, comic books, Star Wars, Disney owning the world. It's just going that way, isn't it? It's they're the films that, except Fast and Furious and Mission Impossible to an extent, are just the ones that attract the big markets these days. Obviously, animation the same, but that's Disney, Pixar.
Black Panther's just crept into the top 10. It's currently the 9th film.
That's just mad.
It's just gone above Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, The Last Jedi, Frozen,
that's crazy.
Beauty and the Beast, The Fate and the Furious, Iron Man 3, Minions, Civil War, Transformers, Dark of the Moon, Lord. It's gone above a number of huge. It's taken more than Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
But obviously that was 2012 and, you know.
No, but I mean, the big thing is people are saying these films are getting old and getting tired. Oh, but they're
who
not,
was
man.
It? Which director was it that was fucking
going off? It was obviously. James Cameron. Even though he's doing his 18 Avatar sequels.
Oh, James Cameron can just suck a dick.
Yeah.
Because I can't remember it was.
And he can keep it in there to keep his mouth shut, to be honest, because he's driving me crazy.
That, like,
slagging Wonder Woman last year as well.
Oh, yeah, saying how it wasn't that groundbreaking or something, and it was all right, and oh, fuck off. He's a knob. Just go and sit on the Titanic wreck and drown.
Well, it frustrates me because people get on the high horse, and still now, and I'm just going to put this out there, I talk quite openly, obviously, about Marvel, and look, Twitter is Twitter. It is what it is.
It's a wonderful shitstorm.
Yeah, but I talk about my love of Marvel openly, and my love of film and music and football and whatever else on a Sky. And people still criticize you. It's like gaming. You know, when it was uncool to be a gamer, and then it's come full circle. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And people always, oh, you play games, you're an adult. Yeah, fuck off. I enjoy playing games. So what? Do you know what I mean? And it's the same with this. People get on the high horse. These aren't real films. They aren't this. They aren't that. Oh, it's not a Shawshank, or it's not a fucking Goodfellas. Or I don't give a shit. It's personal preference.
It's lazy.
And these
criticism.
Films, lazy criticism. And it's just because they don't watch them and they think they know everything. It's the same with critics slagging Infinity War because they've not watched the other films and they don't have a fucking clue what's going on. But it's a huge release, so they have to review it. It's like, look, if you're not. Just let someone review it who's at least watched the other films and be objective about it. Do you know what I mean? It's bullshit. And it just frustrates me because it's like people can't allow you to enjoy what you enjoy because you're a certain age. It's like, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, you think an average year we probably only get 3. I mean, this one's...
Yeah, exactly.
I think we're getting 4 or 5 this year because we've...
Yeah, maybe 4 or 5 if you count with Aquaman.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, that's the fourth one after Infinity War, Deadpool... Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Black Panther. Ben. Infinity,
yeah, 5. Yeah, 5, yeah. So 5.
And that's it. It's not a lot of films in the grand scheme of things. We get a lot more horror shit, and we get a lot more...
Action.
Action films are dying out because they're boring and everyone's seen them all before. At least with these films, you look at Ragnarok, you look at Black Panther, you look at Deadpool, and you look at Infinity War. They're nothing alike.
Well,
do you know what I mean? They are
the
nothing alike.
Said, if you look at the last... 18 months of Marvel films and put them all in a line, you can draw hardly any lines between them, you know, other than the characters. You know, Black Panther is in, you know, Infinity War. If you try and put them together and say, well, this is like that because of this, there's not many lines you can draw between them. Because they're all stylistically, visually, storyline, character-wise,
well, exactly.
They're all so different.
Ragnarok is a space comedy, basically. Do you know what I mean? No matter how you spin it. Black Panther is deemed to be like a futuristic Bond film. That's what Coogler was going for. And I can see exactly where they're going for with that. Do you know what I mean? It's got the car chases. It's got those kind of visuals. And it makes sense. And Infinity War is a grand...
The heist film.
heist film, but it's on a scale that we've never seen. And then Deadpool is essentially just a comedy. It's an action comedy, but they're not alike. You know, you can't compare them at all. So it does frustrate the hell out of me that people can't just take these movies on merit. And that's just me on my soapbox. But, you know, Deadpool, being honest, liked it, probably didn't love it. I will watch it again quite a lot of times, probably, because it is one of those films like the original that you just put on and have a good laugh. And I think they do really well when they get to that point and stop dicking around with the over-heavy narrative that it didn't really need.
Yeah.
Or just kill off TJ Miller, because fair enough. Do you know what I mean?
I would be surprised if Weasel comes back much.
Yeah, they basically cut his lines down to nothing. So,
speaking of things that were cut out, they also cut out a scene which I assume now is the post-credit scene where Deadpool goes back in time and kills baby Hitler.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that.
That when he did the test screenings, apparently that scored very low.
I wonder if that was what... And do you know what? Being honest, I should have mentioned this and been going on a while, but this could have been a train wreck.
Yeah.
Because it really could have been. Like we said, you know, second album syndrome, kind of big fears that they would really fuck up the script, loads of worries about the characters, and there was obviously a lot of hype around the test screenings and problems.
Well,
and that
there was
kind
a lot of problems
stuff
with the director leaving, wasn't there? A lot of people were worried
Miller
wasn't attached to it anymore. People said
the reason. But David Lynch, John Wick, and a couple of other things he's got under his belt, he's a good action director, and I think you could feel that, do you know what I mean? And I think it needed Reynolds as a co-producer to hit the comedy elements, but I think they did well on the action side of things. That's what he's good for, so it did make sense. But no, overall, pretty positive review from me, and I do heartily recommend it. And clearly, we're slightly in the minority that didn't prefer it. So I think everyone else would prefer it if they went to see it than we did. So
yeah. I'm definitely going to try and get there a second viewing.
Yeah, I might well do. We've got Solo to watch, and you're going to watch Jurassic Park, which I'm not in a rush to see, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, I'm on a Jurassic Park hype from Universal Studios.
Yeah, that'll do it. I had that last year. Yeah, I had that last year. Which is making me sad and reminisce. that's good. We haven't got anything quite in the works anytime soon, but we were talking about doing something about female superheroes, which would be quite fun to do, because there was a more announcement about other female superheroes joining the MCU and some various stuff, which would be quite cool to talk about. And a bit of criticism, which we said about this film, but even about the Infinity War, which we don't really share because we think Black Panther and Ragnarok had prominent roles for female characters. But it's a good discussion point, so I think we'll come back to that at some point. And yeah, I don't know what else, but there's always more to be had in this universe. So thanks as always for joining us and giving us as much feedback as we appreciate. We are now on 61, 62 podcasts. It's been going 2.5 years this. So yeah, we appreciate that people still listen and give us time of day. So all good from us. Anything else from you?
No, you said a mouthful.
Yeah, what's new, mate, to be honest?
Yeah, this
is could have made a great, you could have made a really bad James Cameron dick in the mouth joke there, but we'll move on from that. Thanks very much for joining us. We will be back with you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.